If you're familiar with the movie The Men Who Stare at Goats, you'll understand that sound effect. Okay, I use sheep, not goats, but go with it. And you'll also appreciate this commercial-free episode on remote viewing. But first, a plea. Check the show notes for links to watch our documentary and to get super spooky merch. Remember, if you don't, I'll be watching you. Remotely.
In a world where nothing is known, nothing is certain, reality is not real. Wake up! Be afraid of nothing. I'm Bob Heskey.
Robert.
The host with the ghost.
This is my podcast based on my paranormal documentary, Afraid of Nothing. Each episode, we talk to people who see life and the afterlife through a different lens. Join me.
Who is this large man? And what's he doing in our bedroom?
As we lift the veil and open our minds to see beyond our eyes lie. This is Afraid of Nothing. Nothing.
Lori Lambert Williams was born in Spokane, Washington, and grew up moving across the United States as her university professor father climbed the academic ladder. She met the Jesus people just 2 weeks after her 14th birthday and decided to become a missionary. Shortly after high school graduation, Lori began her 20-year odyssey, traveling and living in Puerto Rico, the Dominican Republic, Hawaii, Ecuador, and Chile. After leaving the mission in 1991, Lori began a search to reconcile a lifetime of precognitive and paranormal experiences with her belief system. While working as a social worker in Texas, running a refugee resettlement program, Lori met Lynn Buchanan, a former spy for the U.S. Army. Lynn had been a remote viewer in the military's now famous remote viewing program, researched by Stanford Research Institute and developed by Ingo Swann. Since that day in 1996, Lori has been an avid student of consciousness. In 2001, she began teaching the military method of controlled remote viewing, and her company now teaches more than 8 different courses in various types of remote viewing and remote healing. Lori's first book, Monitoring, A Guide for Remote Viewing and Professional Intuitive Teams, was published in December of 2017 and is available on Kindle and paperback. Her new book, Boundless, Your How-To Guide to Practical Remote Viewing, Phase 1, is now available on Kindle and will be soon available in paperback. Welcome, Lori Lambert Williams. Just read your bio for our audience, so they kind of have a sense of who you are. So let's talk about controlled remote viewing. And just very quickly, what is it? What's the process? And how long does it take to learn it?
Okay, so controlled remote viewing is a written protocol that was developed for the U.S. military. And you sit down at a table with a piece of paper and a pen, and you're just writing things on a paper in a set structure that separates, for example, nouns from descriptive words. And you write all this stuff in a structure, also using a system of kind of pictograms that we call ideograms that create a symbology for your subconscious mind. So the goal of controlled remote viewing is to allow a normal person, just using the vehicle of consciousness, to access information anywhere in all of time and space. So they used it for military intelligence for 20 years, and it's been used for now in civilian life. It's being used for so many different things. But it's really great because what it does is it allows people to realize that they are so much more than these bodies and these physical brains, that we have the ability to travel anywhere in all of time and space and get information that can be validated.
That's great. So your website mentions that there's a wide range, like you mentioned, law enforcement, archaeologists, authors, physicians, scientists, etc. What are some of the most strange and inventive use cases that people have used this skill for?
Oh, gosh, there are so many, I don't even know where to begin. But we were able to help an archaeologist who had spent 40 years of his life searching a 200-square-mile area of ocean, looking for these artifacts that he really believed were there. That area of ocean had been covered with ocean for 18,000 years. So if he found what he was looking for, it would prove that there had at one time been a civilization living there. And so he said, I want to use remote viewers to try to find these artifacts. As I've spent 40 years looking for them, I can't find them. And I said, well, have you ever worked with remote viewers before? He said, oh, yeah, I have. And I knew that he hadn't. I knew that he had probably worked with psychics, but there's a difference. So I didn't bother explaining that to him. I thought when he sees the report, he'll see the difference. And we had 14 viewers and 4 project managers take on this project. The short end of the long story is we were able to give him GPS coordinates. He was able to take a crew and boats and divers and equipment out there, and they found the artifacts that he'd been looking for 40 years. You know, walls, archways, inscriptions, I mean, everything's there. And this is an ongoing project. We're still pulling everything up from the bottom of the ocean and figuring out what it means. And when he got our report, he was just flabbergasted. He called me, his voice was trembling. He's like, I've never worked with remote viewers. It was really, really great. It was a wonderful project. That's just one example. But of course, it's being used in so many arenas. For the military, of course, they used it to search for, you know, for hostages, to locate hostages, to get the plans and intentions of world leaders prior to them acting on them. Nowadays, I have medical doctors who can use it for looking for elusive medical diagnoses, or even doctors that are like in the field of psychology to help when they have someone new coming in, they can actually anticipate what this person's problem might be before they even meet the person using this technique. And then that way they're much better prepared and can serve the person in a much more valuable way.
What about for a pandemic, you know, Lori? Is there like a situation like now? Do people ever want to know, is there any play for CRV in that sort of field to help to discover something, or is it any application for?
Of course, yes. Yes, there is. The thing about this is the thing, Robert, when you're going to use a remote viewer to find out information, like a lot of people say, let's use CRV to find out where COVID came from. Was it developed in a lab? Was it done on purpose? They have all these questions, of course, that everyone's asking. And the thing is, it depends on who you use, because it's really easy for people to use the generic term remote viewing, and which is kind of a basket term like martial arts. You know, when you say martial arts, you know, do you mean taekwondo? Do you mean karate? You know, what kind of martial art? Well, there's a lot of people who hang out shingles and say, I'm teaching remote viewing, but what they're really teaching is like guided meditation, close your eyes and, you know, relax, whatever. Whereas this is a really proven, time-tested methodology that's written, and your eyes are wide open, you're sitting at a table, and you're using a technique to separate imagination from true psychic perception. And that's the biggest problem that most psychics have, is how do I separate my imagination? And you know, if I say, oh my gosh, a child was kidnapped and we've got to find her, then immediately your imagination goes wild, right? Where she could be. And so we try to keep remote viewers completely blind to what they're remote viewing so they don't have all that pollution interfering. And the goal is we just want everything to be as pure as possible. So as we're doing this technique, we want to use someone who has a proven track record on practice targets. So if I have a photograph of a car, let's say I have a red car and I cut it out from a magazine, I glue it on a piece of paper, stick it in an envelope, and I say, Robert, tell me what's in this envelope. And you say, I think it's something smooth red and shiny. I bet it's an apple. And we pull it out and it's a shiny red car. Well, you got the smooth red and shiny correct. But when you tried to name it, names and identifying information come from the left brain. And the descriptive information comes from the right brain. So controlled remote viewing is really a study in how the brain works and the left and right brain interaction, conscious and subconscious interaction. It's truly a scientific method. So we're trying to lift it up out of the realms of Madame Minerva in the Gypsy Tent. Madame Minerva is my alter ego, by the way, that my kids call me. But you know, we're trying to lift it up out of the realms of Madame Minerva and give it some prestige, because it really is based on brain science. So the key here is we want someone with a proven track record, because otherwise, I mean, I'll tell you a quick story. I had a lady come to me and she was like, oh my gosh. And it was my first time meeting her. She was coming to take my class for the very first time. And she said, oh my gosh, I had this dream the other night that I was, you know, working in this hospital and there was all this triage going on. There were people everywhere. And this was in 2006. And so she said, so I'm going to go to my boss and I'm going to tell him to really bulk up on supplies and personnel and hire more people and all this. And I said, wait, how often do you have dreams that have come true? Like, what's your record for precognitive dreams? She said, oh, this is the first one I've ever had. I'm like, then do not go to your boss. Because if you don't have a track record, this could be just a nightmare or a weird dream. And if it is precognitive, you have no idea what the timeframes are. She could have been seeing hospitals in New York, you know, a few months ago, for all we know. But this was 2006 when she was telling me this. So she had gone to her boss and told him all this. He might have fired her, thinking she'd lost her mind.
Yeah.
So we want to always make sure that when we're using remote viewers, that we have people with a provable track record of accuracy. And we can know their strengths and weaknesses. We even database all their perceptions. So for example, you could work with me for a year and you might have a 70% accuracy rating in colors and a 90% accuracy rating in shapes and, you know, or whatever, or describing man-made objects versus describing people. Some are really strong in one area and not so strong in other areas. So if I knew that you were like amazing at describing people, and the police needed a description of the person who just kidnapped somebody, then you would be the guy to go to because you have this 90% accuracy rate over hundreds of sessions. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Now, you know, one of the disciplines you mentioned or one of the professions was inventors. Why would inventors want to use controlled remote viewing?
Oh, now that's a fun use of remote viewing. So, for example, inventors can use it to remote view a technology that would do X, you know, for example, like let's remote view cold fusion. So then the viewer wouldn't be told you're going to remote view cold fusion. The viewer would be told something like the target is a process, describe the process, or the target is a technology, describe the technology. And so we've actually had remote viewers, myself included, I've worked on targets that were dealing with future technology to resolve things that we need resolved.
Is remote viewing, is that something that you can only do in the present, or can you go back in the past or in the future?
It's the ultimate time machine.
It is. Wow.
Yeah, it's super exciting because you can travel back and forth in time and see things, you know, from the past, which is super exciting. I remember the first time that ever happened to me, I was a brand new viewer. I just started training with Lynn Buchanan, and he had given me a target that was a photograph of Bandelier National Monument in New Mexico, which is cave dwellings at the Anastasi used to inhabit.
Yeah.
So it was just kind of a boring photo of a rock wall. And there was like a park ranger leading some people along the wall. And I described it really thoroughly, actually, and very accurately. But I kept going because I didn't know what I was viewing. I didn't know what I was remote viewing. So I didn't know if I was done or not. So I just kept describing. And I didn't know where to go next. And all of a sudden, I was seeing like Native Americans with shiny black hair, bending over fires and, you know, and scantily dressed. And then there were all these feelings of persecution and famine and drought and these different things. And when I actually saw the photo, I realized that once I had described the photograph itself really thoroughly, then I had kept going and gone and slipped back through time to when the Anastasi were there and described them and the whole issue of what happened to them. So it was very fascinating to me, and I was so excited. I remember calling him and going, I think I just time traveled. You
know? Oh, wow. That's crazy. Is there like an empath kind of part of remote viewing that you actually pick up the feelings from your target?
Yes.
Or is it
yes.
There is. Okay.
If you have an empathic nature anyway, then it will translate into your remote viewing ability. And that's why we emphasize detoxing quite a bit so that if people pick up on, because, you know, do you remember Young Frankenstein, the movie with Mel Brooks? Yeah, I love that movie too. And you remember how at the end she's like, well, we know what the monster got from you, but what did you get from the monster? Remember? Yeah. Do you remember that at the end? and he's like, well, the thing is that it's kind of like that. You know, if you stick a knife in a raw piece of meat, is the knife clean when you pull it out?
No.
what about it, the meat? Is the meat clean? And the answer is no, because a knife, unless it was sterilized, probably had inserted bacteria into the meat.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same thing. I mean, it scares me when I see people I know haven't had much training or who knows where they are coming from, who hang out a shingle and say, I'm going to teach you how to mind meld with other people. It's like, that's not really healthy. And, you know, to go into someone else's consciousness, if we're all truly connected on a level of super consciousness or the cosmos or whatever, however you want to look at it, if we're all connected, then you can't connect with another person consciously without picking up something from them and leaving something behind. So it's really important when you come out of a remote viewing session to detox and really, really ground yourself in your own reality.
Talk to a lot of psychics and mediums. This is a paranormal podcast, like entering a haunted house, cleansing yourself before you go in and afterwards, you know, it's kind of getting rid of any residue from there. I guess that's another thing for controlled remote viewing. What about things like ghosts and Bigfoot or things like that? Have you ever had any cases with that?
Yes, it's inevitable that people really want to explore esoteric targets. And by esoteric, I mean targets that aren't extremely tangible. You know, like when I mentioned the red car, that's a tangible thing. And you could actually take your perceptions on viewing a red car and compare them to the car and mark some things, well, that's incorrect, and mark some things, yes, that's correct, because you have a physical object to compare it to. But when it comes to ghosts and Bigfoot and all those things, there's not a lot of tangible proof out there. There's a lot of strong beliefs, and there is even some strong evidence, but we don't necessarily have, you know, something that would really convince, like, you know, the amazing Randy, so to speak, right? Who makes a living off of never allowing himself to be convinced of anything. So, So when it comes to ghosts and things, as far as my own experience, one of the most popular shows in the history of Coast to Coast AM radio show was when I did a 4-hour interview with Connie Willis, who was the guest host that night on Coast to Coast. And what she had done was she had given me 3 targets to remote view, not on the air, privately, you know, just without me knowing anything about them. And then I was supposed to go on the air and share what I got about all 3 targets. And then she was going to reveal what the targets were to me on the air. It was like the ultimate dog and pony show.
Yeah.
So I did it. And one of the targets was Bigfoot. And so it was really interesting because I had absolutely never had any interest in Bigfoot. I had never thought about Bigfoot. I mean, I think Harry and the Hendersons was probably the extent of my knowledge of Bigfoot. So, you know, which wasn't a very good reputable source of knowledge. But anyway, so I start this session and it ended up being really among the top favorite sessions that I've ever done, because I found myself actually interlocking with a consciousness that was very superior. I mean, it was a very developed intellect, and the information that I got, I found flabbergasting. And what's hilarious is I found it so amazing that I was like, oh my gosh, I can never talk about this on the radio. I can't go on Coast to Coast and people will think I'm insane, you know, but the hilarious thing is I found out that
they won't on Coast to Coast.
I know on Coast to Coast, not a chance. And then the funny thing is that when I shared it, I found out that the information I got was actually stuff that a lot of people who have interacted with Bigfoot have gotten, that it was pretty commonly known. And then I also have a number of friends who are Native American and who said, oh yeah, all of these things are known by the Native American tribes about Bigfoot, that Bigfoot is a time traveler.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. So
did you know it was Bigfoot? I mean, you said you kind of were in the consciousness of it and you realized it had a superior type of intellect. Did you pick up that it was a time traveler? And because most people think Bigfoot, big hairy ape, maybe he's a couple generations behind us, a Neanderthal that is very elusive.
That was the most surprising thing. So I started the session, and one of the things about being psychic is that there's, you know, my husband jokes that he can't surprise me, you know, he can't give me any gifts that I won't figure out beforehand or whatever. He's like, you know, my thoughts. And it's funny. We joke a lot about that. But when I started the session, I was only about 10 minutes in and I looked at my husband and I went, oh no, it's Bigfoot.
Oh, really? Wow.
And and I said, tell me it's not Bigfoot. Just tell me it's not Bigfoot. And he just looked at me. He always has a very stoic look. He keeps his expression completely blank. And he just said, go for the unknown. Just keep going for the unknown, which is a saying we have. If you think you know what the target is, but then go for what you don't know, right? If you think you know, go for what you don't know. So as I continued the session, I was amazed at the at the superior intellect and the love and the amazingness of this being that I felt I was connecting to. I came to understand that just as a skunk sprays to defend itself or a rattlesnake has venom to defend itself, that Bigfoot's defense is the ability to move through time instantly. So that can make them very elusive to capture, for example, because they can just suddenly not be there anymore.
Yeah.
and that Bigfoot is actually a more of an interdimensional being.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot. One of the guests I was going to have on, which I had technical difficulties, I hope to have him back on again, is Ronnie LeBlanc, who was on Expedition Bigfoot. That was a show that was on the Travel Channel this past year. They had a team of like three people, a scientist, a hunter, whatever. And one guy got sick and they brought him in. So yeah, he had had stories of where people had seen Bigfoot, but then it dematerialized in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that doesn't gel with me with the Bigfoot stories is, you do hear that he's a very advanced being and all this stuff, but yet he's throwing stones and rocks at people. You would think he would have more superior tools and stuff to throw at people. Any thoughts on that?
You know, I have to tell you, Robert, even though I did the session and it was one of the most popular shows, I never continued studying Bigfoot, reading about Bigfoot or anything. So my whole experience with Bigfoot was that one session. And it's actually up on my website. The written transcript of what my actual remote viewing session on Bigfoot is available.
You want to share that website right now?
Yeah, it's intuitivespecialist.com. So there's an S at the end of the word specialist. It's intuitivespecialist.com. And then when you go there, I think it says more. There's a tab that says more. And when you click on it, there's a drop-down menu with all kinds of stuff. And one of the things that's there is media. And you click on the media, and it's all divided up by interviews. And then there's the remote viewing session with Bigfoot. Another remote viewing session that's there is What Lies Beneath Mount Shasta.
Wow.
And then another one was What is the Purpose of the Pineal Gland? That was another session that was there.
A lot of mediums and psychics, once they do a session, it's out of their mind. They forget it totally. Do you forget after a session, or do you remember it after the fact?
It depends on the session and what the subject matter is. Sometimes there are some sessions that seem to induce me to almost go into an altered state, like a trance state. And that's not something I encourage in my students because we want them to learn the structure and learn to, it's all about self-control, right? Controlled remote viewing is all about controlling yourself because a lot of times people have these spontaneous, amazing things that happen like, oh my God, I suddenly knew my aunt was going to die or something. And then she does. But they can't control that. It just happens whenever it happens. So the idea about controlled remote viewing is that you can control it. It's not the tail wagging the dog anymore. And so we try to keep things in control. But at the same time, there are certain types of targets like Bigfoot and What Lies Beneath Mount Shasta. And I don't know if you knew I was on the Alaska Triangle, that show that came out on Travel Channel called The Alaska Triangle. There's one episode that I'm in, the whole thing, and they flew me to Wales to do this thing down in this basement of this old building. The target turned out to be this place in Alaska that apparently has been in question for a long time. But some of these things kind of induce you to really get into a deeper state of consciousness. And when you're in that deeper state of consciousness, it becomes what we call ERV, or extended remote viewing. And in extended remote viewing, the way that they did it in the military was they would have a very skilled hypnotist. They called them a monitor, but they were really a hypnotist. And this person would guide the remote viewer through several levels of consciousness, up to 40 different levels of consciousness, bringing them up, letting them go deeper, bringing them up and asking questions, letting them go deeper. And so, you know, when I have that happen, what's a really far advanced skill that I had to learn on my own, this isn't anything that my mentors taught me, I discovered that you could kind of develop a way, once you really have controlled remote viewing down and the structure is really part of your nature, you know, like second nature to you, then you can start to incorporate extended remote viewing. And sometimes it just starts happening naturally as part of your development. And you can incorporate this extended remote viewing and kind of slip into a more hypnagogic state where you're a little bit hypnotized or a little bit in a trance state. But the thing you have to have for that, most CRV you can do alone by yourself.
I was going to ask that. Yeah.
But okay. you have to have for this type of thing that I'm discussing right now, you would have to have a trained monitor there because otherwise you'd go so deep you'd stop writing.
Yeah.
And the purpose of CRV is it's an interview and report methodology. So the conscious mind is interviewing the subconscious. The subconscious is connected to all the information that ever was or ever will be. And the subconscious taps into the matrix or the signal line to get the information and bring it back to the conscious mind, whose job it is to record it, write it down. So if you're by yourself and you're so deep, you would just stop talking, you would stop recording. And that's why Ingo Swann, who's known as the father of remote viewing, really discouraged that, you know, especially if there was no monitor, because and even sometimes when there was a monitor, the remote viewer just sort of sitting there with their eyes open, the lights are on, but nobody's home, kind of a thing. Yeah. So, you know, so that wasn't beneficial.
Do you think someone like Edgar Casey was actually doing remote viewing? Because he was like the sleeping psychic or whatever they called him, you know, he would go into the deep trance.
Yes. Well, that's the thing is, you know, remote viewing is such a generic term, you know, it's like, yeah, I mean, remote viewing encompasses a lot of things. When this first got declassified in like 1995, it got declassified and suddenly everybody was calling themselves a remote viewer. I am a runes remote viewer. I am a crystal ball remote viewer. Oh yes. I've been remote viewing my whole life. And so everybody was just sort of claiming remote viewing, which kind of ticked off a lot of the military guys.
Sure.
Because they were like, oh, no, great. We're kicking it into the realm of all things.
Yeah.
And so, again, remote viewing has become like the term martial arts in that it encompasses a whole wide range of methodologies. So we're talking on the radio show right now about controlled remote viewing and extended remote viewing, two types of remote viewing used in the military. And then I was talking about combining those two with a trained monitor who can continue to keep you talking. So my husband is a world-class monitor, and he is really, really well-trained. And so he'll sit there and he'll see when I'm going into that state, and then he can keep me just at the perfect state. He can let me go a little deep, and then he's also a trained hypnotist. We had a very successful hypnosis business for 14 years. And so he can keep me at a state where he'll be like, could you write that down? Could you say that out loud? Could you say that louder? You know, he can kind of give me prompts to keep me talking and to keep me recording.
You guys are like the perfect couple. That's crazy. That's excellent.
We are.
Did you just like did fate bring you together?
No, it was a really supernatural thing.
Interesting.
I dreamt about him. I was asleep and I was dreaming that I was madly in love with this person. And as I was waking up, I was like, no, I don't want it to be a dream. And the only thing I could see were his eyes, his blue eyes. And believe it or not, I've never had a serious relationship with a blue-eyed person.
Wow.
So I was like, I was reaching out and I was suddenly found myself sitting up in bed, arms out, trying to reach for this person that wasn't there. And every morning I had the habit of getting up and working out at 5 a.m. This was back when I was a lot more disciplined than I am now. But I would get up every morning at 5 a.m. and I would pull some sort of inspirational little card out of a deck to inspire me. And, you know, like something that would say like faith or, you know, you are a healer or whatever. It would have these little sayings. And then I would read the little thing that came with the card. And so I started where I have a huge collection of these cards. And for a period of weeks, every time I pulled a card, no matter what deck it was like, you're getting ready to have a new romance.
Wow.
And I was like, what? I don't want a new romance. You know, if there's one thing I don't need in my life right now, it's a romance. And I kept having these cards come up. And then finally, I was meditating one morning and I hear this inner voice say, go to the Unity Church. And I was like, I don't want to go to church. What, you know, is there even such a thing? And I look in the phone book and there was. So I go to this church and I see this woman and she's like surrounded in this beautiful golden glow. And I asked someone, who's this woman? And they said, she's the administrator. So I left, I left and I called the next day on Monday and I said, I don't know why, but I'm supposed to meet you. And she said, okay, come Thursday at 2:00. So on Thursday, and this is a side note, but I had been bleeding for 40 days and I was really sick and I'd gone to all these doctors. They couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. I was super sick. So I show up at 2:00 on Thursday and she's sitting on the stoop of the church next to this man. And he said, he looked up and saw me and here this inner voice said in his head, there she is.
Wow.
You can stop looking now.
That's awesome.
And that was it. We were just together ever since.
Did your inner voice say that too? Did you know by looking at his eyes or did you realize?
No, I didn't really. I just knew when I left that day, we ended up talking for 5 hours and that day, and then the bleeding stopped. I was like instantly healed.
Oh my God.
And as I left this meeting, I said, this relationship between, you know, with this man and this woman is really important. And the funny thing is, his name is Jim. Her name is Sue. And when I was a little girl and we were on long trips, my two index fingers were Jim and Sue, my imaginary playmates, and they would talk with each other and everything. And so here they were, Jim and Sue. And I thought, okay, this is going to change my life. I mean, my life has definitely changed today. And I didn't know exactly how. And then later, you know, when I was kind of, I had been recently divorced, I was trying to struggle with all that goes along with horrible divorces.
Yep.
And I was going through all that. And I was just like, one thing I don't need in my life is a relationship right now. I need to not have a man in my life because that could be a rebound thing. And I just need to be on my own. And I had all these thoughts. And I was going to tell Jim that I really needed space and just to be on my own. And that night I dreamt that this angel came and said, I have to show you why this relationship is really important. And she proceeded to show me like everything that had ever happened in Jim's life and all of his relationship with his mother, his relationship with his ex-wife, and how all those things had played out and made him who he is now, and how it related to me. It was really an interesting long dream that lasted all night long.
Had a life review of your future mate. That's crazy.
Exactly. And then when I come out of it, and the hilarious thing too, is at the end of the dream, we were on the land that we now live on that we just bought 3 years ago that wasn't even, you know, I'd never heard of it or seen it back then. This was in 2001 or 2002. And I was just like, oh my gosh. So I'm sound asleep and the phone rings and he's calling me and I pick up the phone and I'm like, oh my gosh. And I tell him everything. And he's like, there's no way you could know that, because there were like details of experiences that he had. So I told him, he's like, there's no way you could know that. There's no way you could know that. And so after, now when we're talking in a group or something, he'll tell people, yeah, I knew the minute I laid eyes on her that she was the one for me, but it took angelic intervention for her to figure it out.
That's great. That's an amazing story. That's awesome. Your bio mentioned you had a lifetime of precognitive and paranormal experiences. Then early in your life, you became a missionary, I think. You know, you've been over the world both physically and with remote viewing in your mind. So how did you reconcile the precog and the paranormal experiences with your faith? And are you an empath? Are you a medium? Are you a psychic?
Yes. So the thing with the reconciliation actually is what led me to remote viewing, because my whole life I'd seen ghosts. I had precognitive dreams. I had actually, my mother said that when I was a baby, she thinks I was around two, she pulled me out of my crib after a nap and she put me on the living room floor. And the next thing she knew, I was flopping around on the floor like a fish. And then I just lay still and I was blue and my eyes were fixed and glassy and I wasn't breathing. And she didn't know what happened. But anyway, they managed to revive me somehow. I don't think they ever did figure out what really caused it. Some doctors thought it might have been a febrile seizure. And then my parents thought maybe my sisters had given me something to choke on to try to kill me off because they were pretty jealous. And so we get along great now, though. Anyway, so I might have survived a murder attempt by a three-year-old and a five-year-old. But anyway, so I think that did have an effect on my brain, though, because there was definitely a lack of oxygen for a while. And I may have had a near-death experience that I don't remember. But my earliest memories are laying in bed, a really tiny kid, laying in bed and hearing like the most amazing angelic music in my head. And then falling asleep and having these beings come and take me, and we'd go flying and we communicated telepathically. And I would try to communicate that to my mother. I'd be like, Mom, we didn't have to use our mouths because we could talk with our minds, you know. And I would just be amazed at these experiences. And they would take me to these classrooms and I'd be being taught something. I don't remember what I was being taught. And I remember that I could do somersaults and do all these things because I was out of my body and it was so exciting. And those are my earliest memories. And then my whole life was filled with supernatural, paranormal stuff. And then right after I turned 14 years old, two weeks after I turned 14, I met the Jesus people at a park in Knoxville, Tennessee. And they talked to me about Jesus and I got filled with the Holy Spirit and had this huge, you know, amazing spiritual experience that really did. It was very transformative. I noticed that everything looked different right after I prayed with them. They talked to me for 5 hours. I was stubborn. I didn't want to pray with them, but
do you think they hypnotized you or do you think you just became a believer? What do you think happened?
No. I think I really did have a profound spiritual experience. The thing about spiritual experiences is they really shift your energy, right? And so whether you have an experience with Buddha or Jesus or Muhammad or whatever, when you can talk to people from different religions and they can talk about this moment that they had, a moment of enlightenment, and how it transformed them. And I feel like that is kind of a universal thing for people who do have a transformative spiritual experience. And so I had this transformative experience, and suddenly it was almost like, this is kind of rude sounding, but it's almost like I pulled, you know, teenagers are always walking around with their heads up a dark place, right? Yeah, and so, right. And I have 9 kids, so I'm an expert on talking about that. But I definitely had my head up a dark place where I didn't really notice anything. It was just a bunch of people in a park. But after I prayed with them, suddenly everybody looked different, and I could totally tell the people who were religious and talking to other people about Jesus, and those who were standing around and being witnessed to, and I could kind of start noticing this guy's sad, this guy's happy, this person's sick. All of a sudden, it just felt like I could see all these things that I didn't notice before.
Did you see?
And after that,
what was it? Auras that you saw?
No. It was more just a sense of.
Okay.
More, I think it was more just being more aware and more present.
All right.
But then, so I ended up being really into this group. I was like super into it. My parents would take me there on the weekends. I would visit them, and then eventually they let me join them full time. And I went off to go be a Jesus person, right? And I did that. I actually did that for 20 years. I learned a ton. Nowadays, it's pretty much considered a cult. I mean, and now it's kind of normalized and become pretty mainstream. But we went through a period where people were like, oh, that's a really horrible cult. But at the same time, I think people, when they think of cults, they think, you know, horror, they have a kind of stereotypical thoughts about cults. But
yeah.
I do have to say that I think I gained a lot more from it than any of the bad things. Everybody has bad experiences in their lives, but I feel like I really did gain a lot of good experience in the sense of learning how to communicate effectively, learning how not to be super self-centered and think of, you know, to always be thinking of myself, but to be thinking of other people. And just, you know, it kind of set me up for what I'm doing now. But the thing was, is that there was a lot of caution regarding supernatural or paranormal stuff, like, ooh, watch out. You know, you could get demon possessed, or, you know, you could get, the devil might get you, right? The devil was the big boogeyman. And so when I came out of that group and I came back to the States in 1991, I was looking for a way to reconcile, okay, I know that I am not of the devil, and I know that I've had these experiences my whole life, these paranormal things my whole life. So how can I reconcile that with a Christian belief system? And I really went on a search for that. And then it was through that search that I met Lynn Buchanan, because I was working as a head of a refugee program. I was at a conference and I had a dream about the speaker that was at the conference. I ended up talking with him later. And as we talked about it, my dream and things, I suddenly just blurted out, have you seen that new book that just came out? And it was 1996 and David Morehouse's Psychic Warrior had just come out.
Yep.
And he's like, are you talking about Psychic Warrior? And I said, yeah. And he said, I can't believe you're asking me about that book. Because he was a total stranger. And I suddenly blurted out and asked him about this book. And he said, I'm a character in the book because I was in charge of that military program of the psychologists. It was my job to evaluate the men and see if they were psychologically adept for the program. And he said, and I did that for 20 years and I just retired. So he was amazed that this stranger would come up and say, I had a dream about you, and then ask him about the book.
You've had a dream about two main male figures in your lives. And just so the audience knows, Lynn Buchanan was, if anyone ever saw the movie Men Who Stare at Goats, I mean, he was, George Clooney's character was a composite, is called Lynn Cassidy, was a composite of real life spies, which were Lynn Buchanan, which is a gentleman you met, and Glenn Wheaton was the other person.
Right. Yes. That's
so,
right.
Yeah. So that's really amazing that you met him. And he's the one that kind of spiraled you forward onto controlled remote viewing for the past 20 years.
Yeah,
or so,
the guy that I met at the conference wasn't Lynn. It was another guy. I believe his name was Dan Cole. And Dan said to me, as I was trying to get away from him because he's scaring me to death, and he didn't do anything to scare me. I was just kind of fearful about, you know, Men in Black. And he's like, when you get home, look up remote viewing, look up controlled remote viewing. So I did. And that's when I came upon Lynn Buchanan's website.
Oh, okay.
And his homepage said, what is CRV? And when I read it, just that one page, it talked about how this is a normal ability that we all have. And it took all the mystique out of it. It took all the scary, this might be of the devil thing out of it, and made it like, hey, it's no different than your ability to see or hear or taste or touch. I mean, it's just a sense. It's an ability that we were born with that animals have. And this is just a technique to help you access and develop that ability and control it. And I went, oh my God, this is what I've been looking for. It's what I've been looking for all along. And my belief systems have broadened a lot to now, to where I feel that love is truly God, and that love is a force in the universe stronger than gravity, and that there is a universal caring, and that the universe isn't just one thing either. I believe that there are multiple dimensions and parallel universes, and I've experienced them. So my whole belief system had to really, it kind of blew the heck out of my God box, you know, made it much bigger.
Yeah. Now, is your religious belief able to coexist with your spirituality and your paranormal experiences?
Well, yes, because my religious beliefs have changed so much. Like I said, remote viewing has altered them because I've experienced a whole different reality that I never knew existed. My belief system, when I was, you know, in the Jesus people, was very finite and very binary. There's black and white, there's good and evil, there's heaven and hell, there's God and the devil. You know what I mean? It was very binary.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas now things are not nearly as binary as they were. And I have a much, much broader sense of my own spirituality now. And I feel, you know, do you know who Mel Riley is, Robert?
No, no. Who is that?
Mel was the very first guy they put in the unit when they created the unit. And he had grown up with a Native American tribe in Wisconsin. And he was a very deeply spiritual man and was naturally psychic. So they decided to create this military unit that was going to explore the ability to use the mind and telepathy and all that to get military intelligence. So they chose him to be the first guy in. He was also the only guy.
Is that Stargate?
Yeah, Stargate. And he was the only, of course, it was called many things in those 20 years, but Stargate was one of the names.
Yeah.
And he was the only guy that had the distinction of being in two tours of duty. So he was in there when it was first getting started. And then he was out for a number of years while they sent him on reconnaissance missions elsewhere. And then eventually they pulled him back in. And when they pulled him back in, everything had changed and they were now using CRV as the method, and they taught him CRV. And he and I worked on a number of projects together, unbeknownst to us. And then when we discovered it, we ended up becoming great friends. We met in 1999, and he became an additional mentor to me. And he passed away in May, and I'm still just grieving over it, but he just is just a most amazing man, very, very wonderful guy. And one of the things Mel said to me was, he said a lot of atheists went into the unit to become remote viewers, but no one came out an atheist, which I thought was really interesting. He said it really deepened almost everyone's spirituality just to remote view and to realize that you have the ability to traverse time and space, and that we are so unlimited. There's nothing that we can't find out. There's nothing that we can't explore through this technique.
I made a documentary, Afraid of Nothing, and there's at the end, it's like an anthology of all different characters, right? There's like a seeker, there's a scientist, there's a witch, there's a psychic, there's a medium, there's a shaman. And at the end, there's a couple that have shared these experiences. And one guy had a story. I remember one line he said was, here you're in reality, it's air. But on the other side, it's consciousness. It's a totally different state.
Exactly.
So have you ever been able to get out of here, which is a material world, which is air, to like consciousness, to know what it feels like in consciousness?
Yes, that's exactly what CRV has the ability to do. It's like a martial art, though, in that it takes practice. You're not a black belt the minute you walk into the dojo, right?
Yep.
You have to practice and practice and practice. And that even most martial arts are designed, and even yoga, are designed to help you reach higher levels of consciousness. It's not just about the physical aspects of those arts. Well, it's the same thing with controlled remote viewing. It's really about getting to the point where you can transcend and enter into a state of consciousness that is, you know, that's where all the information lies, is right there.
Yeah.
In fact, there's a lot of thought that when UFOs, for example, like, how can they travel so fast? Or how can they just suddenly appear and disappear? Or how can they do, you know, we live out in the middle of nowhere, New Mexico, way up in the mountains. And the sky is amazing at night. We have like a protected sky so that you can see the whole Milky Way. And so, of course, we see a lot of things out here that are, you know, hard to explain. But there's a lot of thought that the way that these vehicles move is through consciousness, that consciousness is what drives them. there are species that have gotten such great control of consciousness and learned to utilize it in so many ways that they can literally, you know, traverse time and space in physical vehicle.
Really?
And there's a lot of thought that maybe even Jesus, that's, you know, I mean, how did Jesus talk about moving mountains and all the different miracles that Jesus did? How did that happen? Well, he had studied with the Essenes during those missing years of the Bible, right? And had learned all these techniques. And when he talks about how if you have the faith as a grain of mustard seed, you can move a mountain. Yeah. I think that the key is that physical matter is very malleable because it's not truly solid. It's a mass of swarming atoms and things. And so because it's malleable, then we can literally affect matter through consciousness.
You mentioned about like kind of beings using their consciousness in vehicles to time travel. And then I thought of like Bigfoot that doesn't even need a vehicle. He just uses his mind to move, to dematerialize. So it's kind of interesting. You know, you have beings that have that still need crafts to do it and others that just can do it with their body, which is amazing.
Yeah, interdimensional beings. And I have encountered interdimensional beings in quite a few of my remote viewing sessions. And that, of course, was never part of my belief system before. So it's interesting when your reality and your experience kind of bust open your belief systems. You have a certain set of belief systems and suddenly you experience something that defies those belief systems or expands them, or however you want to look at it. It's been a real interesting journey for sure.
You know, it's interesting because I would imagine it's a whole different, it would be shocking in terms of what they look like, in terms of also getting in their mind and knowing if their emotions or things like that. So it would, one question is, you know, what are some of the ones you've come across? Are they aliens that we've heard about before? Are they totally different things that we've not heard of? And the second is, once you've met these inter-dimension beings, how do you feel about human beings? I mean, how did that make you feel about humanity? Do you think we're kind of still advanced and special, or do you think we're kind of behind other species?
Oh my gosh, I think we're quite behind.
We are.
I do. Yes, we are. We are very behind. My experiences have been the very first one I ever had. Well, the most profound one that really shook me and really altered me in a huge way. I had been blind task. That's what we call it when you're given something to remote view and you have no clue what it is at all. Yeah. So I'd been blind tasked with a target, and I started the session and I'd been viewing for maybe, I don't know, 15 or 20 minutes. And I had what we call the aesthetic impact. And an aesthetic impact is when you go from just saying random words that come to mind, just, you know, like red, blue, blah, 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 kind of going along like that. And you suddenly have a perception that includes both you and the target. So you're suddenly going, oh, wow, it's taller than me, or, oh, it's next to me, you know, and suddenly now you're part of it, right?
Yep.
So I suddenly had this very strong aesthetic impact. Aesthetic impacts aren't always strong. Sometimes they can be kind of mundane, but this particular one, I had a very strong aesthetic impact, and I suddenly almost, I felt like I had been transported to the surface of Mars, and I was standing there and the winds were like unbelievable. I knew that if I were truly standing on the surface of Mars that I would be dead in a second because the wind and the cold was amazing. And I realized that I wasn't there in present time, that I was there in a past event that was occurring, and it was a climactic event, and I was really amazed at what I was experiencing there. And suddenly, and the interesting thing is I was going through menopause at the time, so I was having hot flashes, and I was hot all the time. And suddenly I'm freezing cold.
Probably good that it's cold, right?
Well, yeah. So we're sitting there and my husband knows that I was always complaining that I was too hot. So suddenly, and we were at his parents' house when this was happening, and in Alamogordo, we were helping Lynn with a class and staying with his folks who also happened to live there. And so they always kept the house really hot because they were old and cold and they didn't want to spend money on air conditioning. And so I'm sitting there and suddenly my lips turn blue. My teeth are chattering. I'm freezing. And he has to go run and get me a blanket. And he's wrapped me up in this blanket. And he's seeing that I'm having a physical reaction to this target. So I'm describing all this stuff. And then as I continued the session, I had an experience where I saw these obelisks that were kind of like Washington Monument type buildings. Yep. And when he said, could you move to the top and describe? So I moved to the top of one of the obelisks. And then he asked me, could you describe the purpose? And I said, it's both for transmitting and receiving information. So he said, could you move to the source that is transmitting to it and describe? I would have never thought of doing that. That's what makes him a good monitor, is that he actually asked me to move to the source that was transmitting to these obelisks. So I was in a totally different dimension. And I was seeing these kind of three turquoise amorphous blobs. And I told him it reminded me of when you have a lava lamp. Do you remember the old lava lamps? And when the blob would kind of extend from the bottom of the lava lamp all the way to the top of the lava lamp. Yeah, that's what they look like. They look like the extended blobs inside of a lava lamp. And so I affectionately call them the lava lamp people, but they weren't people. They were definitely beings. They were definitely conscious. But the message that was being emitted from them was not in language, but it was in understanding. And it was very profound. It was all about love completely. It was just about love. And it was concern for the planet, really dramatic concern. And
concern for our planet?
For our planet, yes. For our planet and our reality, yes. It was really, really lots of concern. Interestingly, around that time, after I did the session, I found out that there were a lot of people. I was reading a book by Sonia Choquette, and she was talking about being in Hawaii and leading a group of people in a meditation, and suddenly she was just like gone. She wasn't there, and she was with these three amorphous turquoise-colored beings that were talking about love. And I went, oh my gosh, you know. And then I think I saw something that Deepak Chopra had written, and he had had this experience with these beings. And the beings had communicated to me that they would talk to anybody who wanted to, you know, they would connect with anyone who was open to connect with them, because they really wanted to get across a message that we had to take care of the planet. We had to take care of this beautiful planet. And so it was a really profound, profound experience for me to have this encounter with them. Since then, I have actually blind tasked a number of viewers, advanced viewers, with the same target, which is the surface of Mars.
Yeah.
And all of them have had the same encounter with these beings and the obelisks.
So there is life on Mars.
Well, the thing is, I don't know if there's present life on Mars, but for some reason, this particular target tends to lead people to a whole different dimension. So I don't have any proof of anything. This could be completely esoteric. And I'm not saying this is truth in any way, really, because it's something that a bunch of us have experienced. But that doesn't necessarily make it real. But yet we have had this experience, and it was very real to us. And interestingly, there's a little side note to this, in that after this was a paid session. I had to write up a report and send it in. And once it was sent in, I got a phone call from someone who said, you've got to contact Mel Riley right away. And I wondered, why am I supposed to? This was before Mel and I really knew each other real well. And I called Mel, and he said, tell me everything that happened to you. So I started explaining, and he was finishing my sentences, because he had been a viewer on the same project and had had the exact same experience. Exact.
Wow.
And that was really the session that bonded our friendship, because we'd both experienced this so profoundly.
That's great confirmation. Have you ever, not to go to the dark side, but you know, you've just mentioned this really great, profound thing about love and stuff. Have you ever had any experiences where it was just so horrific you couldn't finish the remote viewing, you did not want to go there, or you wanted to leave it because it was not a good place to be?
Yes, I've had that happen on two occasions. One was for about 2 years, I worked with the police on missing person cases, and it was a missing teenager. And I didn't have any idea what I was working on. I was always blind to the target. And I was working on it, and I had the experience of getting shot in the head.
Ugh.
And it was very painful and really, really tangible. I mean, it wasn't like when you dream about something. It was like it really happened. And I leapt out of my chair and went, oh my God, I just got shot in the head. And it was... That was a very unpleasant experience.
Your poor husband.
Yeah, he was like, oh gosh, you know. Anyway, it was difficult to detox from it. I found it extremely difficult to kind of cleanse myself from that. And I really didn't like it. And it showed me also how I was becoming very drained from a continual diet of missing person sessions.
Yeah.
You know, that it's so negative. Like sometimes we were looking for criminals. And then, you know, when you find criminals, sometimes were very dark spirit. And so I found that for my personal well-being, I had to let go of that, not do that anymore. And then I also found that targets that are kind of directed like, what will be the worst thing that happens next year kind of targets, I know better than to take those on because you are automatically being aimed at something very negative.
Yep.
Because every year bad stuff happens, right? I mean, we live on a planet that's very, very alive and vital, and bad stuff happens. So, so constant, you know, to be tasked with that sort of thing is not healthy either, I feel. And also because the future's not really set. It's like a moving target. Mel used to say, you know, I was on this project where we were supposed to view the future and the damn thing wouldn't stand still. it's just trying to view a moving target, and it is kind of fluid. So, you know, I've just seen so many professional viewers get themselves into trouble by trying to predict events. This volcano, this is going to happen. This thing's going to collapse into the ocean, or, you know, all these people are going to die from blah, 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 or whatever. That's a really negative place to go. So believe it or not, the dark stuff and the icky stuff isn't from some esoteric thing like viewing, you know, evil aliens or ghosts or anything like that. Those things usually tend to be pretty fun and have been very positive for me. But it's more the tangible things in this reality that can be very dark and unpleasant.
So did you have a bad feeling about 2020 before it came, or were you just kind of surprised like the rest of us?
Not specifically 2020. What I have had, and what I've been telling those closest to me for a long time, is that this was coming. I wasn't sure of the time frame exactly, but I was like, okay, so we're going to have these events are going to take place that are going to be so devastating.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I'm very nervous about the upcoming election, and regardless what happens. But let's end on a positive note. Let's end on let's talk about plug some of your books, your guides out to help people. Two books. One is called Monitoring: A Guide for Remote Viewing and Professional Intuitive Teams. That was published in December of 2017. And you have a new one called Boundless, Your How-To Guide to Practice Remote Viewing Phase 1. You want to give us a quick, you know, sentence or two?
Yes. It's actually Boundless, Your How-To Guide to Practical Remote Viewing Phase 1. But it's, Boundless is the first of a series of books that I'm working on. It covers really the whole first day of my 3-day workshop in basic remote viewing, basic controlled remote viewing. And it's a fun book to read. My whole goal is to make this accessible to people, because I feel like one of the things that will be most powerful for people who want to reclaim their power, who want to reclaim their autonomy, is to have the ability to get information when they need it, right? And to be able to see past cloak and daggers or manipulation or whatever. I have to laugh because we have friends who are both very conservative and very liberal. And if you look at their Facebook pages and their Facebook feeds, the liberals are being fed all the liberal rhetoric and the conservatives are being fed all the conservative rhetoric. So we can all be manipulated. So I've learned to not even look at reality as the way it's being portrayed to us, but to use this ability that we have to access our consciousness and get real answers. And so we're empowering people by teaching them how to do this and making them not so much victims of whoever happens to be in power politically, or whoever wants to control things, or whoever has the most money, but we can actually help individuals get answers for their own lives and what they should do, where they should go, how they should live, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And that's why I feel that my mission is really important in making this accessible to the common person, to the most common Joe, if you want to say that. I hope I'm not being offensive by saying that. I'm a common Joe too. This can't just be in the hands of a few elite people. It has to be available so that we're all playing on an even field. And so that's my vision. And so when I was writing Boundless, I wanted to write this how-to thing in a way that would make it really fun and really easy to understand and easy to do. Not a huge biblical tome, you know, that looks like the family Bible that's 10 inches thick, but something that would just be a simple book that you could get through pretty quickly, that had a lot of little exercises in it that would really give people the idea and help them introduce them to the ideas of how to breach into consciousness in a way that allows you to open the door between your conscious and your subconscious minds and allow them to communicate with each other so that your conscious mind can finally have access to information that it needs.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many friends and colleagues we all say, whether we're liberals or Republicans or in the middle, nobody knows what the truth is anymore. So it sounds like this is something that could help people find their own truth, which is really great. Now, once they do this and they learn how to self-help, but is there like online courses that you have or on-site courses? Teacher.
Yes. In fact, I have a free course on my website at intuitivespecialist.com. You'll see it at the top of the page, a little left of the top. It says free masterclass series.
Oh, that's great.
And it's a four-part remote viewing course that you watch over 4 days. I think it starts on a Monday. It goes like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday or something. And you watch it over 4 days. And by the end of it, you actually know how to do something. I wanted people to have an experience of remote viewing just from this free course so they could actually experience what it's like. And then if they like that and they feel like this really resonates with me, then they can actually buy at a discount after watching that course. They can get a $300 discount on a full 6-week course.
Wow.
It's a 6-week video course, and we have it in basic and in intermediate now. So, you know, so people will be like, well, what happens after I take the basic one? Well, you can take the intermediate one. And I'm working on the advanced now. And that would allow people to actually take the full buffet of the entire, all the way through the advanced level. And I'm also working on an associate of remote viewing course as well, as a 6-week course.
Well, that's great. I mean, people are home, right? So they have time to do this, which is excellent.
Yes, it is. And people are. That's why, you know, we have such a wide variety of people, you know, from police to doctors to archaeologists to scientists to, you know, housewives. I mean, you know, people just really, CEOs, you know, people really are being drawn to this right now because there is the need for it.
And your books, are they available on Amazon? Do you have a website too that they're available on as well? Or
No, it's all through Amazon.
Okay.
All right. You can buy it through Amazon right now. It's, yeah.
And can you give us your website one more time?
Yes, it's Intuitive Specialists with an S at the end of specialist, intuitivespecialists.com. And there's lots of free stuff on there too, Robert. I have a ton of free things on there. There's a free ideogram practice program. There's several free little mini classes on there. And then there's the big 4-part masterclass that's free on there. So I tried to put as much free stuff on my website as possible.
No, it's a great site. I've looked at it. And when they go to Amazon, they should look for Lori Lambert Williams. L-A-M-B-E-R-T is the middle name.
That's correct. Yes, Lori Lambert Williams.
Excellent. Well, Lori, thank you so much for your time today. I love talking to you, and I hope I can get Lynn on at some point as well.
Oh, I know Lynn. You would love Lynn. He's the most delightful man ever, and I owe him the world. He's been a wonderful mentor to me.
Well, if you talk to him, put in a good plug for me. I'd appreciate it.
Okay, I definitely will.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Afraid of Nothing podcast. Please subscribe and like us on Facebook. Until next time, stay scared.